Hello, everyone, friends and visitors. I welcome you to Mentoring Moments, where we are hoping to ignite hope inside of your life and also to help those that are mentors or leaders or teachers learn how to help people and to help themselves. And this series of teachings, which will be in 4 sessions, is entitled Helping People Out of Dark Places. And you know, sometimes we're the people in dark places, and other times we're helping people out of dark places. And so I'd like to start with that, and I'd like to let you know we're working in my home studio because going to the real studio isn't possible right now due to current world events. And you know, I could procrastinate all I want. So what you're seeing is the real deal, folks. This is the house. This is my low downstairs studio. You can't see my keyboards and my piano and my other recording microphone for my podcast, but you get to see all my wrinkles, and my lipstick is probably crooked tonight because there's nobody helping me but me. Well, that and the Holy Spirit. So it's real and it's raw, but sometimes that's what we all need, including the person producing, right? So let's go. One evening a few years ago, I was watching a heart-gripping and fast-breaking story, much like most of the world was at that time. And most of you will probably remember where 12 little boys and their soccer coach were trapped in a waterlogged cave in Thailand. And this group of boys and their soccer coach were just exploring the beauty out there, and there were caves and people often visited, but there were many. And when a sudden storm caused the passageways to flood when they were climbing up in there, and it trapped them inside. They could not and would not be rescued overnight. Why? Because they could not dive, and none of them could swim. And they were weakened from lack of food, and of course they were in trauma. And so the group was found in the cave by British rescue divers 10 days after they went missing. Imagine 10 long days being in the dark, and maybe someone might have had a cell phone with a light in there, something like that, but it was getting pretty grim. There had been a search for them, and their bicycles were spotted outside of the mouth of the cave, or the entrance of the cave. And once the rescue people assessed the situation, they knew that they needed specific and skilled cave and water rescuers to see if they were inside and if they were actually alive. So imagine, one diver keeps swimming and he finally makes it up into this open cavern area and travels several miles, and it was narrow passages, and some were underwater, some by squeezing through. And when he pops up in an open cave area or a cavern area, there they were, 12 small boys and their coach perched on a rock shelf in a small chamber, and it was about 2.5 miles from the cave entry where they had originally entered in. They had little food, just some snacks that they had in a backpack, or very little light when they were discovered. So picture, they were dirty. They probably didn't smell very nice. They had more than likely been exposed to parasites in the cave, maybe bugs. The water was not drinkable, and maybe they did drink it in order to survive. So this was a very frightening, long 10 days. Now, experienced cave rescue experts consider an underwater escape a last resort. They were hoping to drill down and lift them that way, but it was impossible just to get all the gear in. It was a very remote, strange, jungly area. And especially the people who are untrained in diving, as these boys were, it was almost really the thing they didn't want to do, is take them out underwater. And the path out was considered especially complicated because of the twists and turns in their narrow flooded passages. So it was dark, it was dirty, and it was cold, and the space on top of this all was filling up with water. You know, their situation seemed impossible, and I can remember sitting there feeling like everything a mother feels over these little boys and how their family must have felt. And I felt like I wanted to help. I wanted to call out to them, help is there. People out here are praying for you. People are gathering resources. They're helping your mommy and your daddy. They're helping everyone. But that didn't help them. They were in the, they couldn't hear from the outside. They only had what was inside to help them focus. And their situation did seem impossible to escape from the weather report as well. It was getting worse, and they said that it was the seasonal monsoon rains were also approaching. So this just seemed too surreal, too frightening. And of course, people were angry. Why did they go in? Why did they get themselves in that situation? What was the soccer coach doing? Well, the young soccer coach was about maybe in his late teens. I think he was maybe 23. So he was just taking the boys because they'd won and done so well in their little soccer tournament, and he wanted to take them on an adventure. Most of these children were poor, and so riding their bikes and exploring the cave, well, hey, boys would want to do that, right? And so it just seemed like if this rain came, the caves would fill up to the top, this cave. Rescue was desperate and needed to be immediate. And so as the news personality on the program that I was watching, and I was glued to it, interviewed different experts in the area of cave and underwater rescues, I was struck by the wisdom and the statement of one of the top of the field experts. I mean, this has been a life statement situation for me when I heard this. It has helped me help others, and it's helped myself. And he was one of the top experts in dive and cave rescues, and he was a Scottish man, and his name was Steve Whitlock. And the person interviewing him asked him the question, first of all, what is the most important thing that you feel must be done in these types of situations? And the second question was, what can best help those that you are rescuing to keep them calm and focused the most and to get them back out to safety? And his response was so simple but deeply profound. And for me, it is the true foundation of where any mentoring or servant leadership situation or opportunity must flow out of. Steve Whitlock said these words regarding the rescue of the Thailand soccer team boys. When you are leading people out of dark places, reassure them with presence. Wow, that stuck with me. And then he said, they must know that you are there. They must know that you are there. And if you think about it, it's in often dark rescue situations, you know, if it's a dark place or a dark place where these kids were, people can't see you well. So how do you let people know you're there? We'll talk about that. They must know you are there. And they must know that you are present in the moment with them. And they must trust you. That's really amazing. Just deep and serious words, but so simple. But they need to know that you are there. They need to know presence. You know, when any of us experience changes in life, and we all do, whether it be job-related or having children, perhaps the loss of a child or raising children, or not being able to conceive a child, an illness or a debilitating medical condition, maybe you have a different or difficult medical situation, or you've had an abusive or sexual emotional devastation. You know, we all long for someone to talk to. It's a dark, hard place when those things happen to us. We need someone to hear our hearts, our fears, our weariness in doing good when it seems like it will never pay off. And in those moments of pain and fear and shame, and what feels like being trapped in a dark place, or perhaps just a dim one, we all need presence. We need someone who understands where we are and what we are feeling. And it must also be someone we can trust. Oh my goodness, yes. We also need to know that they are there, that they aren't just marking time, listening to us, looking at their watch, checking their Facebook page. chewing gum, sipping a Starbucks, whatever, that they are there looking at us. You can tell when someone has compassion on their face when they're engaged or when they're just prejudging you or they presume that they already have, oh, you're this kind of personality and you're this, or I see this, I label you. That is not being present with someone. That's judging someone or that is presuming you know. And when we're present with people, we need to take off all the layers of what we think. We need to be listening, but we need to be listening with our hearts and listening to that vertical voice that speaks into us saying, here's something. Oh, look at their body language. Look at how sad they are. Look at the nervousness. Look at the pain on their face. Look at that. What's going on? I'm here for you. I see you are in pain. I see you are hurting. We need to know that the people that we are having help us, that they're listening and that they empathize with their pain. You know, someone can say, oh, I'm so sorry for you. And you're like, there's absolutely no connection there. Do you understand pain? Do you empathize? And to have empathy means to put yourself in their place and not just be sympathetic. I'm so sorry, dear. It's a, oh, put yourself there and say, how would I feel? And when we do that, we empathize like, wow, this is a hard thing. I need to know what it is you need right now that will help you right now. We need to know that they're present with us in our moments of loss or when we're in grief. When we're in pain, it can be physical, it can be emotional. There's so many kinds of pain. Tooth pain, man, you can have a great day, and if you have a tooth that suddenly decides to scream and go rogue on you, I'll tell you what, you can't think about anything else in that moment, but I have got to deal with this pain. Well, I wouldn't want a plumber hammering around in there or using some wrenches on there to figure it out. I'd want a skilled dentist to look at my mouth. And that's why we have to be skilled in our ability to help people out of dark places, skilled in empathy, skilled in compassion. Sometimes people are just in pain. They're in great fear. Whether they're real fears or not, they're still fearing something. And then we need to celebrate people when they've hit a growth mark in life. They've done something well. We need to be present with them and say, good for you. Not like, oh, well, I knew you could do it. That's a little passive aggressive. We're like, well, you finally got there. You know, those are passive aggressive or just basically plain mean, condescending statements. And that's a killjoy. That's somebody who just throws water on everything. We need to say, good for you. Wow. Validate. Kind words, compassion, thoughtful, encouraging, inspiring. Move them on. That's why I like the word igniting hope. Let's ignite hope in people. Wow. Imagine what you're going to be able to do now with all that you've worked hard for. And then, of course, we need to be there and celebrate with people when they've hit a landmark in life or have overcome something.